Goals, the pod that tries to improve our FPL play through a more analytical approach. I am back for the first time this season. I'm joined by a new host for this season, part of the rotation. As I said in the tweet, the ever gracious Sebastian Wessel. Thank you for joining us, Seb. How are you doing?
Mate, I'm good. And I'm Wessel. It was like the closest I've ever had it. So I'm really good now. Thank you. I'm delighted. You've made my evening. And speaking of which, like, thank you so much for having me along for this ride of yours and Sam's and Ben's.
No problem. That's the first time I've ever nailed a pronunciation in my life, then, if that is correct, unless you're just being giving me some leeway there. let me see.
I'll take whatever, you know, whatever I'm called, I'll answer to it.
Love that. That's going to work well for me. how's your pre-season been going, Seb? Because I haven't really talked to you at all pre-season. Have you been drafting like a madman? Have you stepped it up towards the end? What's been the deal for you?
Yeah, so I'm someone that drafts a lot, like a lot, partly for pleasure. Like I enjoy, for people that don't know, like my day job is game design. So like naturally problem solving, putting things together for fun more than anything else is a thing I enjoy. So often I would spend a lot of time going, what does a Salah team look like? What does a Kane team mm-hmm. look like? What does a Haaland team look like? Even if I'm not going to go with it, just so I have that information available to me. Then in the past, I sort of found that when time was short on deadlines and when panic sets in and I can be quite susceptible to, you know, those emotions taking over, I found it useful to know, okay, if in that last moment I decide I must have a Kane team, at least I've already got one in my head and I'm not panicking those last few minutes like, oh, where do I spend my money? However, that being said, this year, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's just less time or maybe some of the tools out there are taking that burden off me now because I can rely on them to do that, I think I've made two drafts, which was one last week and one for us tonight.
Wow.
And I feel quite chill about that, but maybe too chill because we go tomorrow, right? And I have no idea what I'll do if I suddenly want Mo Salah.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I buy into that as well, actually. I like the whole experience of drafting. In fact, for me, most of the time before the season starts is actually the funnest part before all the pain begins. So yeah, I usually quite like it, and I have drafted a few times, but I would say this season probably less than ever. I don't know if that's just playing the game a lot, you know, it's the same thing over and over, or maybe it's a product of, like you say, the tools or just the pricing in general has, I think, taken away a lot of those needs to do it, I suppose. In the past, I felt a long time like, you know, I want this player or this player, and it has a massive effect on the rest of my team, and I have to completely reconstruct it. Whereas this season, it doesn't really feel like that. It feels like I'm switching like 1.5 million midfielder for like another, or maybe going up like 1 million or something. So, yeah, maybe it's a product of that, or maybe I'm just getting old and boring. I don't know. Probably somewhere in between.
Maybe a bit of both. Mm. But I hear you on the like with maybe pricing and the idea that in the past, I think I would go, okay, I want Trent Alexander-Arnold, but how do I do a Trent and a Robbo team? Those are set, so therefore I have to rotate my cheap defenders around that. And so I'd build drafts trying to fit them in, and then, you know, you go with your classic, like, two premiums or three premiums. And this year, again, like you, I'm not sure what it's a product of, but I very much felt like, well, I know my midfield's going to have Bruno, Rashford, Saka, probably another Arsenal. I know my defence will have two of this three. So the bits that I've had to play around with have been... And I know I haven't had Kane or Salah, so it's just Haaland up front. So effectively the question is goalkeeper, another defender, another striker, maybe something like that. So maybe there's just been less for me to play around with, potentially.
Indeed. Have you just seen FPL Spartan's comment, by the way? Do you agree with that? Can you see that? Wessel, I believe, is an English word derived from a verb to indulge in a righteous drinking. Does that sound like you?
Maybe back in the day, not so much anymore.
You're in a hotel room.
Despite my sore throat, not so much anymore. But when we were in, I'm sure a lot of people did this. I think it was year six or year seven, something like that. We did that project where, you know, look up where your second name comes from. Go on a journey to find that. And I think I ended up with two. And one was, I think it might have been derived from like French, some French for like wassailing. Might not be French, but was sailing, which was like a dance, quite a merry dance. I was like, oh, that's fun. And then the other one was like Norwegian, the mast on a Viking longship. And I was like, that one, that's the one I choose. That one, that makes me sound cool. So I'm going with that.
Nice. I think mine means fire, or maybe it's my middle name. I don't know if it's Greek or whatever, but that's what I got told once. Huh? Yeah, don't know if I agree with that, but I'll take it all day. Speaking of basically having quite set teams and optimal, what we have planned for you today is to show you basically what FPL Review has said is optimal with default minutes for 8 weeks. And I must add, that is when I did it about 2 hours ago. These things are fluctuating a lot. I actually saw a tweet from Review a little while ago. Someone was saying, how come the team keeps changing like all the time? And he gave a very, or much better answer than I'll give, but essentially because things are so close and very marginal difference will spit out what is the perfect team at that point. And the team you had probably an hour before that or the hour before that is probably absolutely fine unless it was affected by some deep injury news or whatever. So don't be surprised if you get different results when you run it. And we're very close, I think. So if I try and bring it up on the screen now, so for the benefit of anyone listening on a pod later, we've got Steele in goal, Estupinan, Gabriel, Luke Shaw, Ruben Dias at the back. I've got Saka, Rashford, Bruno Fernandes, Havertz, and Mbeumo, which I think is, I see that everywhere. We've got Haaland up front, and then we've actually got a goalkeeper rotation going on. So Pickford in goal, James on the bench, Morris from Luton, who has creeped in now despite that blank, and then Archer, almost that dead spot. Rumours he might be moving to Sheffield United as well, I saw on Twitter recently, so maybe that will become a pretty good 4.5. I think when Seb run it and the team that he's got, it's very, very similar to this. Have you got any overriding thoughts on that optimal team? Anything that stands out to you where straight away where you think, I'm not so sure about that?
Yeah, in terms of the team specifics, those rotating goalkeepers, it always seems to be something that the models like, because I guess they can be, if the word is optimistic, I don't know if that is the right word, but they can be perfectly optimistic with, well, of course you rotate cheap goalkeepers because it's the best way to access the most EV, and you rotate for a good fixture every time, you give yourself the best chance of a clean sheet and the highest amount of points. But I always feel in practice, while of course we should play to the EV because probabilistically that's how we're going to receive the most points, I always feel like in practice, something like a goalkeeper rotation, especially a cheap one, is the one that's most open to noisy results. So something like, yes, they have the best chance of getting the most points in a clean sheet, but what if they play Liverpool and it's that random game where they make 12 saves? Now, I'm not going to say I can predict that, but maybe I just, in my own head, I then just prefer the safety of going, well, I'll pick my keeper that I just stick in every single week, don't have to worry about that, and spend my 0.5 elsewhere, especially in a season where we might have, excuse me, if it's not a starting 4.0, it's at least a couple of 4.0s that have a chance of minutes. That's quite an attractive prospect for someone who wants to get money into their team.
Yeah, I also say that I think the rotating goalkeepers thing, there's probably a little bit of bias in us here where we've all had experiences where it's not gone well. It doesn't mean it's not going to go well this season, but it has not gone well for me in the past, certainly. And therefore, straight away, you're like, forget that, I'm not going to do it anymore. So I think that probably does factor into our thinking a little bit. But I suppose it's also, you kind of want that, again, maybe it's just a leftover from how we used to play, but we want that money on the pitch rather than goal at the start and the rotations, and we think, well, maybe later we can look at that and go back. But I do like the way it gives you a probably, I guess, a chance to pick which one of the golden 4.5 keepers there will be, because there probably will be, right? There usually is someone who just stands out, and if you've got two of them in your squad, you've got the chance of getting the one that is the better. Yeah, not sure I'll go down that route myself with the Turner thing. I'll probably use him personally. I think you might be the same there. But Steele in particular, I just think with him, he probably is the best pick, actually. I actually really like him, but we just don't know whether he's going to play, do we? So for me, it's got 92 expected minutes at the moment. Probably does stay in goal for a little while, but I don't know. The worry's enough for me where I think I'll not have him. Are you feeling similar there?
Yeah, so when I did that first draft of mine, I went straight for Steele because I'm pretty confident. Goodness, excuse me. I'm so sorry. But when I did that first draft of mine, I was pretty set on Steele because I don't think Verbruggen is going to come in and immediately take minutes off him. And it's not like an outfield player where he can come on for 20. Well, probably. I think stranger things have happened. Eventually, he might lose that spot. But I think at first, I can be pretty confident that Steele gets those minutes. But my philosophy, maybe with Brighton defence in particular, was do I want to jump off in game week 3? If Estupinan is locked in our teams, do I want to have a Brighton goalkeeper as well who I need to get rid of? Potentially, that's why we've got the rotation here, right? Because that takes him out of my hands. But then I was attracted by the idea of Edison, especially of a City defender, because it allows me to do the thing that I guess I'll say for when I do my team, the one interesting thing I've done, which is I want to do something a little bit different with my defence. And I needed maybe my City goalkeeper to allow that to happen. So I shied away from that eventually for myself.
Cool. I think that's reasonable, and that's kind of what we're trying to do. Is why are we not going with essentially what the EV says? Because that's what we're supposed to do, right? As analytical managers, we're supposed to look at the EV team and say, "This is the best EV. I don't put any other input, and that's what I pick." Or at least that seems to be common perception between some crowds on Twitter, and I just don't think it's the case. So yeah, I think for me, when I looked at the team, the back line, and if we move on to that, Estupiñán, Gabriel, Ruben Dias, I've got all three of those in my draft, which I'm going to show in a minute. I think that's absolutely fine. I think the conversation around James and Chilwell, where do you go on that? Because to me, it's a bit of much of muchness, to be honest. I couldn't tell you. I think they're both as good as each other, almost, depending on what situation we end up with.
I think when I did my solve, at least when I, not before today, but earlier, Chilwell was the favoured option. And maybe James getting the cut to captain's armband, just those little minutes tweaks. Maybe we're thinking penalties again, maybe that faint hope. James is now just edging ahead. But I think the reality, and this is one of those, you mentioned just getting the optimal team and copying it and going from there. Absolutely, you can play like that and you'll probably do pretty well. But I think that criticism of maybe playing quite an analytical led approach is often, well, it's taken skill or fun out of the game. And I would argue it hasn't. It's just changed what that skill and fun is. And we've gone through quite a few generations of that in fantasy football. It used to be watch match of the day, who's the best at judging what that means. Then sites like Scout came along and all these stats came in. And then it was, okay, can you apply stats to what you're seeing on the pitch? And now we're getting the era of the models where it's, well, now can I use a model to make me a better player? How do I do that? For me, there's still skill, there's still preference, there's still a human. Obviously, there's a very brilliant human behind review, but there's humans having to put inputs into review and interpret the outputs. And on James and Chilwell, I think the key thing there, and Review put up a great tweet yesterday or earlier today about the sensitivity analysis. Just because this team of 15 players is saying pick James, the reason for that could be because what James is there, he's like 3.1 for the first week. A Chilwell could be at 3.0, so a 0.1 EV difference. If you run this again, even with slightly different settings, or just run it again tomorrow, it could change. So I think with anything where there's like a probabilistic input, but a binary, I guess this isn't binary, it's 15ary, but a defined finite output. If you ask me to choose James or Chilwell, I have to choose one of them, even if I believe it's a 51%, 49% decision. What I can't do is I can't reflect my probabilistic understanding of what the chances of the best decision are in my actual decision. So I have to pick a side. And I think this is where, when we're using review, we need to look at not just the single solve you might get and the top solve, but maybe the top few, all the ones that are quite close in EV. Start playing with those. Force Chilwell into your team. There's an option where you can force include a player. See what that does to the rest of the team. Does it massively kill your EV? Does it make changes elsewhere? And I think that's how, at least for me, that's how I use it as a tool to try and arrive at what I consider my own personal optimal. And we haven't even discussed about, cheating X-Men so that you can confirm your bias.
Which is what I'm doing all over the place, and I'm sure quite a lot of other people are too. Yeah, I think the interesting one in the back line there is Luke Shaw. Like, I think when the game first launched, he was in there. And to be honest, it's only really this solve that I've done recently, because I've run quite a few that I've seen him appear. I haven't seen him appear very often at all, so it's quite a surprise he's popped back in there. But I would argue that, I mean, nothing's really changed for Luke Shaw. I've seen this narrative that Onana coming in means Luke Shaw will have less bonus, and maybe that's the case. But I still think he's a really good pick, and he takes corners, obviously some great fixtures to begin with. So I can't even argue with that pick. I think it's absolutely fine. I think you could also say, I think we're going to look at the solve in a minute or what it suggests, but Luke Shaw potentially could move on at that price to a number of different picks as well, couldn't he? So yeah, I've got nothing to say there that I would say sway anyone away. He's going to start, isn't he? As long as he's fit, he's going to play. So that's pretty much the pretense you need to get into my team these days. So yeah, I think it's decent.
Maybe the one question I should put to you here then is, we have Ruben Dias, who I think everyone acknowledges of the defenders is the safest in terms of minutes. But should you go for John Stones for that taste of a midfield, maybe even a progressive eight? Do we think his minutes are safe?
I think they are probably safe, but at the end of the day, we're all guessing because it's a completely new season and we've got new players there, and we know that Pep can even roll out new systems sometimes with those new players. He's obviously lost. I mean, a big one is Kovacic, right? Instead of Gundogan, we saw he started him, and then we saw that Kovacic actually played in the pivot, and then Stones played in the back line. Now, we're all guessing, or I am, that maybe that's not going to be needed for some of the easier games, and it was more an Arsenal setup, but we don't know that. Kovacic could line up tomorrow. Is it tomorrow? It is tomorrow, isn't it? Versus Burnley, and they could play a similar system, and Stones is no longer inverting, and he's playing at the back. Now, does that make him a worse option? Potentially not. You know, maybe it's a bit overstated how far he is, but then he's got more competition because he's in a spot that is more hotly contested in the team, rather than just probably competing with like Rico Lewis in midfield a little bit more next to Rodri, or you could argue Phillips as well, but not. But then Kovacic playing in that role as well. So the question marks aren't answered. So I think with all of that taken into account, you know, Ruben Dias is just the safest pick. I don't even think, you know, 100% for sure Ruben Dias is completely nailed, because we have seen him drop out before. But, you know, in my mind at least, he's got the best chance until it's shown otherwise that he's the number one pick. So I don't think he's like a necessity to have in your team, but I think he's probably the best pick all things considered now, especially when you add Gavridal. Maybe he starts, you know, inverting from the left side. I don't think that'll happen straight away, but it could do. So yeah, that's probably a very long-winded way that I think, like everyone probably already knows, Ruben Dias is your best bet. Stones is probably absolutely fine, but for those managers who don't want to take that sort of extra 5% risk or whatever it might be, yeah, you just go with Dias.
Yeah, I mean, Fadiel at 5.0 would be lovely if he started getting, what, 4 out of 5 games, something like that?
Oh, he himself could be a great option. Yeah, absolutely. That's another one we don't really know, right? We don't know yet. The thinking is he's been signed for a lot of money, so therefore he goes straight in the team. I don't think that's necessarily the case, but I think it's just he's such a good player that there's a chance he just completely nails that down, because they've kind of patched up that position for a while now. You know, Ake, who has done fantastically well, wasn't really, at least initially, signed to play that role and be the star man in that position. He kind of just fell into it and was really good. Akanji as well, kind of signed almost as a backup, I guess, across the whole back line, played ever again, played really well. So is you know, the signing of, I can't even say his name. Can you say it for me? Because I got slated.
So I think I sometimes I nail these and sometimes I'm a mile off. My understanding is it's Josko Vardiel, so like miss the G effectively.
Vardiel, okay.
I think
Let's go with that.
I'm sure someone will get it better than me as well.
I sound good saying it, so I'm going to say that. Vardiel, he could just be the guy that goes in and plays every game. Like, I don't think that's the case, but it could be. You know, I think he'll still use Ake if it's a strong opponent he wants to fight, if he sees something in a Kanji. We don't even know how he's going to adapt. He might come into the league, you know, have all this great experience, look like a great player, and sometimes players just don't live up to it straight away, and they're a problem, and maybe Pep can't afford that. So yeah, it's, to me, still a little bit of risk. The thing here is, as well, and part of the reason why I've also given up even doing the team sheet things, is we just seem to get leaks all the time for Man City, and quite early often as well. Yeah. So I think tomorrow, the chances are we'll probably get that information. And then if he is in the starting lineup straight away from the beginning, it's probably a pretty good indicator, I would say, that he is then fancied. I know Ake's got a slight doubt, but Akanji can do that role fine. So why would he just suddenly throw him in? Maybe that ups him enough for some people to pick him. And I couldn't really say, don't do it. I think it'd probably be a good pick as a result. He could be a fantastic pick.
I think that's a really interesting question, because we are very likely going to know what the City team is tomorrow before the deadline. So if you have chance to adapt to that, maybe you should. But while, you know, while in FPL we can be quite short term, like the solve we've run here is only up to 8 weeks or so, because even if you don't wildcard, so much can change in that time. There's not much point going too far beyond it. It gets very, very noisy and you start planning for things that you're never going to execute. But with a City team leak in game week one, I wonder if, because it's that's one piece of information we're going to get, do you reckon there's a risk we could put too much weight in it and go, so like maybe Foden starts or Alvarez starts or Vardiel starts, and you go, sweet, now they're in my team. And what you've actually done is, yeah, get a start tomorrow, but they could still get only one start in the next four. And have you almost biased yourself, you know, available information bias into a mistake there? Or do you think we can trust that little nugget of information we're going to get tomorrow in the medium term?
Well, that's it for me. I just still think there's the opportunity that he's going to rotate. There's a world that exists that he starts that game, he comes in and he stays in the team and he plays all 8 or 9. Like that could more than, you know, it's probably even more likely than my version where he might rotate every now and then. But there's, again, enough of a risk for me not to want to do it straight away when there are other options that are just like pretty much secure in the team. So, well, not just in Man City, but in other teams. So I'm not prepared to set the risk, but if anyone does it, you know, it could work out absolutely fine. And I think we can always move there, right? If he is playing every single game and he looks great and maybe he's even attacking in that role or he offers something, then I think it won't be long before everyone's on top of him. I don't think we're talking about a player that can run away here with like sort of 15, 20 points every single week and you've absolutely been smashed out of the park and it's destroyed you. You're talking about, what, 6, 7 points most, you know, a few weeks in a row or whatever. It's really just he's starting, isn't it? That's the main thing, the main appeal for him, so... Let's see, someone in the chat here, Emil Christensen, saying Ruben Dias won't travel to Burnley. I hope that's a joke, but maybe it's not. We'll see. Midfield, I don't think there's too much to discuss there. You said right at the beginning, I said in my team and on the review Optimal, Mbeumo, Fernandes, Rashford, Saka, at least those four are just like a lock for me, you and review, it seems. Is that Is there anything else to add there? Have you got any leeway at all for you?
Oh, I mean, even if you go and play four midfielders, you're probably just dropping Mbeumo to a 4.5. You're probably still sticking with the expensive of those lots. So maybe it's just that final spot there's a discussion. Anyone who's gone for more than just Haaland in the premium bracket probably has to drop Rashford. You know, Rashford to Salah, and then you've got to find a couple of million elsewhere. But I think realistically, they are decently ahead on EV minutes, obviously, which contributes to that EV, that I think we can be fairly settled in them, even if the information we get in the first couple of weeks suggests we should jump off. There are plenty of options to do that. So the interesting one for me, other than, you know, there's arguments for Matoma or whatever, but the interesting one for me is that if you are playing five in the midfield or even four in the midfield, that Havertz spot that we've got here. Now, that only recently has become Havertz on review, I believe, possibly because up front, possibly because more minutes, because Jesus is out. It had been Ødegaard and Martinelli was the main conversation for that spot, I think, until just now. So are you leaning towards review now? Or I think, like me, I'm sticking between Martinelli and Ødegaard because I don't trust for you, actually. I think it's because I don't know where the Havertz confidence has come from. And so I think I'd want to know that before I went there, because I want to know what I need to be watching out for to, like, get out of that situation.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I mean, I've got Havertz. I will say I didn't even realise he was in the review team until I ran it recently. I've got Havertz simply because in my mind that's probably the spot I'll move on in game week 3, and therefore I've kind of got a midfielder for 2 weeks. I know I shouldn't classically think like that, but I look at all my other picks and think they're pretty solid, and I have no reason to move them outside of injury, so where would be the place I'd use a transfer if I have to? And it's probably that spot. As a result, they've just got really good games and there's a chance he's up front, so I've kind of gone with what I think is probably the upside in classic quotes, and then I'll move it on. I don't even have to move it on in three, because if he is starting, the fixture's still really good, so it makes me feel quite secure about him. I also think if he's not playing up front for Arsenal, he's probably playing in midfield anyway at the moment. That's the chance anyway, but it doesn't have to be him. There's a number of players that I've had in that spot that I think are pretty good for 2 weeks, and then you can maybe move on or even look at a more long-term option like Eze and take the million. Like, that's another option I've looked at. So I don't know where I'll actually end up tomorrow, but it will be one of those variations. By the way, apparently FPL Raptor, who was good for the Man City leaks last season occasionally, has tweeted that Diaz will not be travelling. So I can only assume that he's actually injured, which, I mean, would make sense.
That is quite interesting for this, because you're either then going Stones, who I think is the same price as Diaz, or if you do get that Vardiel news and we learn that Diaz is out for a while, maybe that's a nice 0.5 saving.
Yeah, I mean, he says it. I'm just reading it now, actually. Ruben Dias will not be travelling with the Man City squad to Burnley for game week one. So does that mean he's going to turn up on his own, or does that just mean he's not with the squad? Can we read into that? But he was very accurate last time doing this, so he must be injured. That's the only thing I can think of there, which then instantly changes things, right? I probably wouldn't be comfortable going with a Man City pick at all now, unless we get that.
I think that's right. That probably pushes me toward... It'd be interesting to see if that pushes review back to Edison as well, because it loves some nailed City defence, which I think is a fair thing. On that midfield spot, I just bringing up review here with my solve earlier, so it may be a couple of hours behind yours, but looking at the total score over that first 8 weeks, Martinelli is projected a couple of points more than Havertz at, say, like 34 EV versus about 32. On very similar minutes, but it's those first 3 weeks that Havertz seems to beat him just, which probably contributes to why Havertz is favourite up front in the squad. And I wonder if that is then taking into account the fact that Havertz is potentially playing 9 in those first few weeks and then maybe drops back to 8. So aligning with your plan, I think a short-term pick of Havertz makes a lot of sense. But with mine, where I think I'd have to hold him for a few weeks if I go the route I want to go, that's probably why I'd be leaning towards, say, a Martinelli or an Ødegaard if I'm sticking with Arsenal players.
Yeah, I'd also add Jesus is due to come back, isn't he, at game week 3-4, which probably has a knock-on effect with Havertz. So the decay on Havertz will be more than Martinelli, I would have thought, which will have that impact. I agree with you. If it was a longer term, it's Martinelli all day, and I suppose even longer term, it's Ødegaard probably is right at the top of that list, if you can afford it. Let's move on then. So it's just a short one up front for the optimal team. It's literally got Haaland, two 4.5s. I don't feel comfortable doing that. I'm just going to say it straight out of the bat. No, not 4.5. Morris is 5, isn't he? Is that right? Is he 5?
He's 5.5, is he actually? Is he 5 or 5.5? Because I know João Pedro ended up taking that spot in a lot of people's teams.
Because it's his teammate that's 5, if I remember rightly.
I'll have a very quick look for you here, my friend, so we can confirm that. He is Morris is 5-5, yeah, so same price as João Pedro, which obviously a lot of people will be going João Pedro. I'm guessing Rui is just a little cooler on the minutes.
He was like 40-something last I looked, whereas Morris is obviously 82.
That seems quite low, actually. If you're talking about playing with X minutes, it'd be interesting to see what you get with a 50 or 60. You're basically then saying, I think he starts, but he's maybe one of the earlier subs, which I don't think is a terrible assumption.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'd agree with that. And I think if you do start putting him in there, he starts appearing straight away. And that's something, you know, that we suggested right at the beginning. And I think I agree with that. I think probably sort of, you know, around the 60th minute mark is probably a decent presumption to begin with for me personally. And therefore, we probably would jump in ahead of Morris. Yeah, I'm not so keen on that. But again, do we have a good reason to go against it? This is obviously playing Luke Shaw and James in rotation, and then it uses Morris later on, which I think if you look at a long-term hold for a cheap forward, which it likes, Morris is probably better than Pedro on the information we've got now, at least, that he's probably... We know Morris is going to play if he's available, right? Whereas we don't 100% know with Pedro. So I kind of going to understand it.
I think something I often find when I'm using review, at least compared to my own biases, is that it values free transfers a lot more than I might naturally. Mm. So like you say, having someone like Morris, even if he's just benched so much to start with, it probably doesn't want to move that spot on anytime soon. It just wants to have a bit of an option on the bench, but not have to spend a transfer moving that around. Because I think the default for valuing a transfer is about 1.5 EV or something like that. Yeah. I often end up dropping it to about 1.2 or something for myself.
Yeah, and I sometimes even go to 1 because I want it to make loads of transfers for me. But it never works out that way, does it? I think it's probably more sensible to keep it.
Actually, when we start the season, that's a really interesting way of... sorry to interrupt, but that's a really interesting way of using it. So right now, we're basically almost doing a wildcard function from the first week. Mm. But when you get a couple of weeks in, what's actually really interesting is to force review to try and make decisions, mm-hmm. not to necessarily copy them, but to sense check what looks sensible. So if you go and set free transfer value to like 0.2 or 0.4, which normally you would only do if you were planning to wildcard in like a week or two, because then you need to use your transfers. It's interesting to see if you try and force it to be a little bit more courageous with moves, what it spits out for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I do that quite a lot. And I think that's good advice, to check out. Because sometimes, I mean, as we can see here, I've just put up the optimal solve with that team for the first 8 weeks. So I've not included game week 1 here, because obviously that's the team I just showed you. As we can see, so the arrows are actually transfers. Anyone who's not familiar with it, it's actually only recommended on the default settings 2 transfers in the first 8 weeks. That's because it values that information, like Seb was just saying, and obviously you should run a solve every single week after it as well to see what else is updated. But right now, sorry, I think is it 2 transfers or 3 transfers? In fact, 3 transfers I can see there. So Estupinan to Chilwell in game week 3, Havertz to Pereira for game week 5, and also Gabriel to Trippier in that same game week, and the rest of it's left. I don't think it's not saying go ahead and burn your transfers. It's just saying this is on these settings, you know, if everything else is not needed, then you can get away with this. And like Seb says, if you start putting that value down, it will recommend more. But it's a very sturdy team that will last you across those 8 weeks, according to review. Is there anything there that stands out to you that maybe you're doing or you thought about? I think the Estupinan to a Chelsea defender is an interesting way to do it. Some people are burying him on the bench. Some people will be bringing him in 3. I think that's...
Yeah, so... I think for my team, that's the key one. I've started with that double Chelsea because I don't want to use that transfer so quickly in moving Estupinan to a Chelsea defender, which if you don't want double Chelsea, that's a lot easier to do. I guess my one risk in my team is that I want to back James stays fit, maybe even gets, you know, that penalty, and Chilwell stays fit. And because they don't have Europe, I'm quite bullish on those minutes, especially where Chilwell has very little competition or substitute in his position. James obviously has Malagusto, who does look good, but I think he is a backup. And if they were in Europe, you could see James being played in Europe, especially Champions League, and Gusto getting the league and a bit more rotation. I think if they're fit, they play, especially in these first few weeks until I start looking at a wild card. So I am happy to be a bit more risk positive there. But in order to do that, I want to start with it, so at least I hold a transfer, not move to it, so that if it does go horribly wrong or we get injuries or whatever, mm-hmm. I haven't booked in a transfer to get into the position I want to get in. And then the other thing here, I think, on the opposite side, that I think I will go with review here, is that Gabriel to Trippier move makes an awful lot of sense for me. When those fixtures turn, I think Trippier over that period actually has a higher EV than Trent, even if you ignore, you know, the value per million there. Trippier comes out ahead of Trent. So if you can get onto Trippier, which it suggests using Gabriel as the sacrifice here, that's something I like.
Yeah, I think I haven't really particularly looked at that myself. I think using Botman come up a lot as well, who obviously can be that 2 million understudy. I don't suspect for a minute he'll score as many points as Trippier, but it's another avenue. But essentially moving to a Newcastle defender in game week 5 is something I've looked at quite a lot as well, and I think hopefully if I can get to that game week and my team's in good shape, that's something I will do. And I've also seen people as a result still put Botman on the bench, which I think is fine. I know you probably won't want to play him in the first few weeks, maybe in game week 1, but I don't think there's any problem with having him hanging around. When the game first came out, everyone thought that's a massive mistake to have him at that price, and I still agree with that. So I think if you have him on your bench buried and the rest of the team can cope, then you know, you should bring him into your team later. It's still a more than viable strategy. So yeah, I don't mind that either. The Havertz to a Pereira one's a bit iffy for me. I know Pereira was fantastic last season, but I think FPL Review values his minutes maybe a little bit high when I looked. I still think he's probably a good pick, but maybe there's also a hangover from Mitrovic not playing and him having penalties there. I don't know what you think about that, maybe.
Yeah, I guess penalties and minutes are something that Review loves, which is reasonable. And Andreas had both of those last season. Is it potentially just to afford Gabriel to Trippier? Because yeah, Gabriel's 5.0, Trippier's 6.5, so it's got to find value somewhere, and it's doing it in a way that it likes.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's just to have it, holding on to habits to game week 4, that might work well, but I think you're starting to get to the zone where Jesus might be back, and then I'd start to get nervous around game week 3 and 4, even having him, I would suggest, compared to others. Game week 3, there's a massive change, isn't there, for a few teams, like Chelsea on their 3-game run, that's really good. Yeah. I think Man City's run is really good. Spurs' run with Maddison, for example, or Richarlison, if Kane's gone at that point, is really good as well. So I think I'll do well to be able to avoid one of those teams and bring someone in for him at that point, but we'll see.
You mentioned Spurs. What would be interesting, actually, is if Kane, and we're not going to get this before tomorrow, I don't think, but if Kane pretty much looks like he's gone, and Review now considers Richarlison the striker, at least until they sign someone, does Richarlison, a 7.0 midfielder, start coming into this team? And there's that spot right there. The Havertz spot could very easily become Richarlison.
Yeah, I wouldn't hesitate, to be honest, on that. I might start with Havertz, but like you say, as soon as their good fixtures come along, and if he's playing up front and Kane's gone, then I think that'll be the obvious transfer for me, to be honest, and probably for quite a lot of people. Nuclear Atoms, Fred to Fenerbahce is done now. Here we go. Yeah, I love that. I think Fred, that's a bit harsh on Fred. I think he's been all right, to be honest. I think he's been a victim of various things. He's done a job. He's been okay.
Yeah. City wanted him. So unless they were just trying to play Man United there, City are very good at talent ID.
Yeah. Colm saying here that Mitrovic played in a behind doors closed friendly. Yeah, I did see that. It looks like he seems to have reversed on this. Well, I don't even know if it was fact. It was just the media reporting that he might not play for them again. Doesn't seem to be the case. And I think today he even said that he's available, didn't he, the manager? So I suspect he will probably play. Yeah.
I wonder if that kills the Andreas move.
Quite possibly. I think he's still a good pick with him. I just think, yeah, it probably does kill it for me if I was even thinking about it in the first place. People still talking about this Diaz thing. Yeah, that's one we'll have to pick the bones out of afterwards. For me, it may have just made me pick James and Chilwell, to be honest. I can just switch Diaz to James now. That might be something.
Yeah, come over to my risky side.
Yeah, I still, but it's just James and his fitness. But you make a good argument with the no Europe thing. I think that really impacts it. I'm not so bothered about this captain thing. He's obviously fit at the moment, and the fact that the games don't come thick and fast mean that I think there's more chance than ever that he does start the games. Someone also has put there, Emil again, with some good input here, that the tactical insight is that watching Chelsea, he's been tucking in more, and Chilwell has been bombing on. And that's obviously a trend that we've seen in the Premier League. I don't know if Pochettino will 100% do that, and it is maybe a slight concern that he may stay back, but I think his delivery in general, if he gets given them, and then the fact he has penalties, probably still makes him a good option there. But I guess that's something we'll have to see, right? I think against some of the easier teams, maybe he doesn't stay back as much. That's the hope, and maybe he does go forward. I don't know. Maybe they just both bomb forward anyway.
I think there's a really interesting interpretation of something like that as well. So if Emil has actually watched those matches, then they will have an answer to this question of their own. But if you were just looking at, say, heat maps, those are super, super valuable. But say someone like Chilwell, who, if you look at their stats from last season, Chilwell and James both had very roughly something like high 0.2 non-pen XGI per 90 each. But a lot of Chilwell's came from goal threat, and a lot of James's came from assist threat. Now, obviously, in FPL, we'd rather have goals because they're worth more points. They're a better route to bonus points, even if they are a rarer occurrence. But I think a way of then applying that to the bit of analysis Emil has put in the chat here is that if it was the other way around, if James was getting forward and Chilwell was staying back, well, if Chilwell's threat comes from goals and he's deeper, that really kills his potential. Whereas James, if he's relying more on assists, it is a lot easier to get assists while remaining deeper, especially if you've got delivery like Reece James does. Yeah. unlike, say, someone who has to get into the box to get those chances. So while I think that's definitely worth paying attention to, it doesn't quite kill my interest in the way it would if it was the other way around.
I completely agree there. Yeah, we've seen games before where James is in the back three and still just stepped out a little bit and just delivered ridiculously good passes. So I think Chilwell in a back three would be suicide in a lot of different ways, not just in FPL. I don't think it would really work, to be honest. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see anyway. Shall we move on then? So that's the optimal team. I'm going to switch to your team now, Seb, which is pretty much the optimal team when you run it, which is like one change, I think, and it's an interesting one. It's basically Shaw for Alvarez.
Yeah, so when I did mine, I will quickly run through it for anyone listening. Just let me go from the transfers page. So I have Edison in goal. We've kind of discussed that already, and I wonder if review will end up going there if DS is indeed out, just for those minutes. The meme on Twitter is Edison won't outscore a 4.5. You're absolutely right, and when I know who that 4.5 is, I'll go there. But for the start of the season, for those minutes, for the access to a City defence, I probably want me some of that. Maybe I'll change, but I like it. It's safe.
It's looking better now with the Diaz news, isn't it?
Well, yeah, exactly. It then allows me to, yeah, I'll luck my way into the optimal team. It then allows me to go Chilwell and James at the back. I have to bench one of them in the first week, and I will play Gabriel and Estupinan, which I think pretty much everyone has. I then have Rashford, Saka, Fernandez, Martinelli, that Martinelli spot we've discussed. The other three I think are pretty nailed. And I have Mbeumo. I do have him yellow flagged here. So, of course, if we do get news, I will very happily move him on or have to rejig my team for a bench. Haaland, who currently has my armband, I know review suggests as Saka. Maybe we can discuss that later. And then my one real change here is I have Alvarez up front. Now, this was a review suggestion. I'm a little nervous about this one, actually. Maybe the opposite to my Chilwell and James shout. But I thought this was an example, unlike Chilwell, James and Edison, where I think I can make a good argument for why I will go against review in my own pick. Here, I looked at him and went, I can't make a good argument not to pick Alvarez if we think the minutes are there, if we think the points potential is there, and the price is lovely, and it's a spot I can happily move on. I think the main difference between Alvarez being in my solve and not yours is that I locked Mbama, and I think I might have locked Areola or Turner, whoever it is, in my team, which forced review to not be able to pick, say, something like Morris. I think maybe it had to go for a more expensive striker or a striker that it wasn't going to bench, and so it went for Alvarez. I think that's how I ended up with Alvarez, and then I don't have enough evidence myself to go against that, so I've happily gone with the recommendation here.
Yeah, and again, Emil in the chat here saying if you go for Alvarez, you can easily move to Jackson in game week 3 for his good runs. Is that something you were eyeing up if you do go down that route?
Yeah, so I've got double Chelsea already, and if Nkunku hadn't been injured, I would very likely have Nkunku in this team. Maybe I wouldn't have double Chelsea defence then, because I wouldn't want to spread myself too thinly across Chelsea in those first few matches, just in terms of, you know, benching options. But yeah, I think triple Chelsea, if we don't see that they fall apart in those first couple of matches, or if the system looks fine, the Nkunku loss is a big one. He looks like they're Bruno Fernandes, not in style, but in terms of importance to how the team works.
The link man, everything.
Yeah, yeah, he looked so important. So losing Nkunku is a blow for FPL, but it's a blow for Chelsea as well. I think till December, it could cost them a couple of places. But if they don't look terrible, it obviously helps Jackson's minutes playing up front. 7.0 is a lovely price. So yeah, I think that's a very easy transfer to make. And I believe this team, it did have, this has got 0.0 in the bank, but when I made earlier, had 0.5, which might have been, or 1 million actually. I think that was when I had a cheaper keeper than Edison.
Okay. Yeah, I think the Alvarez thing, I mean, the worry for me would be that Kevin De Bruyne's already getting minutes, right? And historically, we've seen that it's been one or the other usually. So, I mean, De Bruyne could easily start versus Burnley, couldn't he, in his place? But there was a world where he started playing all three, Haaland, Alvarez, and Kevin De Bruyne, you know, rather than play Bernardo Silva or Kovacic in the eight, which, you, again, we come back to the versus different opponents versus Burnley. That kind of makes sense. Like, he could play De Bruyne, Alvarez and Haaland. So I think he's fine. And obviously you can be geared by leaks there. It's just more the worry of then what happens in game week 2, game week 3. But if it's a short term move, I don't mind it, to be honest. I think any longer term, you start to worry on that one, I think.
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, check back in 24 hours. If anything has changed in this team, it's the goalkeeper and Alvarez, which will be based probably on my own biases, my own risk appetite. Mm. And I'm going to run another couple of solves and see what review says.
I suppose as well, if you can argue that Diaz is out and injured, we don't know now how long that'll be. I'm only speculating that he is injured. It could be other reasons he's not travelled. But let's say he's injured. He could be out for a while. And if he's out for a while, I would suggest that probably makes Man City's defence worse. I know they have got class players all over and people who can fill in. But Diaz is certainly someone who has a big impact in terms of the leadership and playing that central centre-back role. So there, as a result, you know, Edison's probably worse. Well, I mean, the fixtures are still good. They can still get clean sheets, but it probably has a non-negligible impact, I would suggest.
I think that's a very fair shot.
Okay, I was going to show the review set up your team that's got here, but it's pretty much exactly your team, isn't it? There's no reason to bring that up, I don't think. Unless
I think we covered the differences, right? It wants you may have flicked. Yeah, you flicked it there. It wants the rotating goalkeepers, like you said. It's got the captain on Saka. But it doesn't have double Chelsea. What it wants me to do is it wants me to do Gabriel to Chelsea later, and it wants to hold Ruben. But I think I've discussed how I've tried to sort of make that work differently for myself.
Yeah, and we've got Botman in there again, stealthed on the bench, like I was mentioning earlier. So if I go to my team, which is pretty much, I suppose I have to read it out for the pod, so forgive me if you're watching and bored of the same names being read out over and over and over. But it's Pickford, Estupinan, Ruben Dias, which clearly has to change now, possibly to James or even Stones, Gabriel, Saka, Rashford, Bruno Fernandes, Mbomo, Havertz, Watkins, Haaland. I think this is close to like as template as you'll see. Review didn't necessarily come up with this team, but it was very close, as you can see for me. Like, I've made only a few changes here or there. And I think Watkins has appeared in a number of solves in recent weeks as well, so it's going to be a negligible difference. The one I'm probably a little bit nervous, I mean, my bench has got Surridge, who obviously isn't even in the league anymore, just to not lose value. I've got Kabore there from Luton that, although he might be playing wing-back, I don't think we can say for sure that he's nailed because he's a new signing. I mean, I don't know. I don't know enough to suggest otherwise. He could be just terrible, couldn't he? He could come into the league and just not be what they need and he gets dropped straight away. Also, I would really, really not want to play him in any fixture. So that is a worry that my bench is pretty threadbare. It's really just one player I kind of look at it as. So that's not what, most times models will suggest. They'll suggest quite a strong bench. So that's probably the weakness of this team. But if I'm looking to wildcard in game week 9, the theory is maybe I can get away with it and then go for a stronger team with hopefully a little bit more value. That's what I'm looking to do. So any comment on my team there? Do you think there's anything I've got drastically wrong, apart from Ruben Dias, apparently?
So you've obviously gone for basically as cheap as you could, goalkeeper-wise. Review would want you to rotate those. Mm. You've gone, I'll just have Pickford. Is that you are happy just to sit on Pickford, or are you going to jump ship as soon as you can and maybe hope that Turner's there just in case there's an injury, which is a very low probability, of course?
To be honest, the goalkeeper's probably the one that's given me the most stress. Like, I am still not settled to this point. I don't particularly like Pickford as a player, so that's probably impacting me, where I kind of like just don't want to have him. But the fixtures are very good. Turner obviously offers really good rotation in the games. Not that I particularly would want to play a Forest goalkeeper. And yeah, if I'm doing that wild card in 9, I think the fixtures are very good. So it kind of makes a little bit of sense. He's right near the top of goalkeepers in terms of EV for value as well at 4.5. He's right at the top anyway, if you include all the goalkeepers. I may still move to Flecken. I think it's him or Flecken for me. Flecken, even, I think you could argue, the rotation's not as good, but the benefit is that you actually play Flecken a lot more. I think you actually only play Turner 1 week. I think it's away to Newcastle and arguably game week one for Flecken's not that good versus Spurs. So the rotation's not as good, but then you play Flecken more often, which appeals to me more than playing Turner, so if that makes sense.
Sure.
And then afterwards, I think Brentford are probably just a better team than Everton defensively and probably do better. So it just depends how long I want to put that horizon for, and I may still switch, but it's really between those two for me now. I have looked at Edison and even Onana, and I just feel like maybe I can go there later because I just want to take advantage of the good fixtures early on. So yeah,
that's fair. And I mean, you can squeeze some value into your team before you know where the value options emerge, I guess, which makes it's probably facilitated Watkins, who does come very high on review solves. In fact, when you just look at the pure forwards list, I think he's right up there. But often it's the position that's getting sacrificed to try and put funds elsewhere, for example, a Ruben, but so it can have rotating goalkeepers, which you just have Pickford and Turner here.
Yeah. The only other thing I've really looked at is, do I go from Jackson from the beginning rather than Watkins? Because I do think Chelsea's fixtures are better than Villa's. I think Watkins is a safer pick, it's obvious reason.
He's a longer-term pick for sure, isn't he? You can hold him for a while.
Yeah, I think with me, that like I don't know if I'm thinking about this right, but Watkins is either I have him from the beginning or I get him in game week 9, and therefore I'm just like, am I prepared to get 8 weeks without Watkins or not? And I don't know whether I am. you know, you could have both Jackson and Watkins, and I've looked at that. So Havertz could go to Jackson, and then you just put a 4.5 million midfielder in there. You could argue that would make my bench stronger as well, because Surridge isn't going to play, and, you know, Nkamba might play, so it makes it a little bit stronger at least. I'd have 0.5 left over as well for any dramas. So I kind of looked at that. So I think Jackson is one that I could maybe look at. And then the other alternative thing I've looked at is, do I do Jackson for Watkins? And that gives me that million. Then I can put Surridge up to Pedro and just have an even stronger team that I could rotate. So
I do quite like that, because that also gives you the option of hedging your bets on Pedro minutes. Because you could, you can't start him, because, you know, if he comes off the bench, he could absolutely betray you there. But if he does start nailing down that position, you aren't a transfer away from him. You can play him when his fixtures look tastier.
Yeah, the issue I had with that, and it's probably not the way to think about it, in fact, I know it's not the way to think about it, is if I get do that, so I move it to Jackson and I get Pedro as well, I don't know who to bench.
I know what you mean. That, you know, what, you know what that is? That's a really good example of, I think, why, again, tools like Review, or even just talking to a friend who has no interest in FPL, maybe, why something or someone with an objective approach is useful. Because we look at teams that you're like, oh, I've got a benching dilemma, and emotionally you want to avoid a benching dilemma because it's a more pleasant experience for you. But actually, a team with a benching dilemma necessarily is a stronger team, and a stronger team is a good thing. And I think we come back to a bit of a risk aversion here as well, where if you get your benching dilemma wrong and bench the wrong player, you will feel that so much more than if you bench the right player and get the points in your team. So I think naturally we want to avoid that risk of loss, that pain we feel more proportionally than we feel the joy of winning, and just remove that from the question. So we can't possibly, you know, we can't possibly bench the wrong player because I don't have a benching dilemma, and thus I feel happier, even if I've damaged my overall points potential, or in this conversation, EV, which is really what we're trying to play for.
Yeah, I think that's all fair. It's just going into game week one with probably, I suppose, from this team, it would be either be Mbeumo or Watkins himself. You would end up benching if you bought in Pedro.
Yeah.
Yeah, and both of those I don't feel easy doing, because they've got penalties and everything. Yeah. I know all the reasons you've just mentioned, it just screams of pain, and as a result, I veer away from it.
I'm very comfortable, you know, launching into that monologue talking about risk aversion, and then I'll do the same thing as you, my friend. Just because I know that that's the case doesn't mean I'll go against it, right? Our emotions and our biases are a strong thing, and they're there for a reason.
Yeah, I still may do that though, because like you say, it does give me that. When you look, so people talk about game breakers and stuff like that, and people that, you know, just literally could make a huge mockery of their price. I guess he is one of them, especially in the early stages for me. I do think he is at 5.5 if he is going to play all the games and play on penalties. You know, the fixtures are so good. Luton, could he score a hat-trick in that game? I just think he quite comfortably could do. I know he hasn't really got the historical numbers to back up that sort of play, but we've seen under De Zerbi that players with not great historical numbers have suddenly turned into pretty damn good players quickly. So I think there is a chance that, you know, we could have something special there.
Is there maybe an EO conversation there as well, which is another aspect of, I guess, using Review and how we may differ. The Haaland captaincy comes into that there, where Review is probably just going to make the best decision based on an objective look of this is the most points and this is the best route to getting points. But we will often try and, I guess, apply a bit of game theory, if not just fear theory, to FPL and go, OK, I know Review suggests this, but it is not enough of an EV gain to protect me from what could happen if it goes wrong. And Pedro is one of those where if his EO, which for anyone listening who doesn't know, effective ownership, how many people own them, the reason we say effective is because when you have a captain, it's doubled. And obviously at different ranks, there's different spreads of ownership. So it's who you're competing against, how many points actually matter for your team. If Pedro is quite lowly owned and he scores a hat-trick in the first week, yeah, it looks great for the people who did it, but it doesn't really hurt overall. But if he starts creeping up to 20, 25% and scores a hat trick, that's a lot of managers, and probably engaged managers, they're getting points that you aren't getting.
Yeah, EO is definitely scary, but it's something that I try not to factor in at all if I can help it. And I think that's not necessarily the right play, but that's just my approach. I mean, when people would look at that team and say, well, clearly you take EO into account. I don't. I just think those are the best picks. Like, and a lot of people seem to agree with it. That's just the way it works. I don't know. I know there is that game within a game almost with EO, but I try to broadly stay away from it because I just, for me, myself, it's just for my own. I don't know. I just don't like the whole EO conversations. I guess that's what it is. I don't like the fact that it's public information out there as well, and people use it to actually play the game for them. When do you factor in? Do you factor in when it's just a tough choice either way and it's like a safety blanket, or do you not?
So I'm like you, but maybe for not as smart reasons. So I would like to pretend that it's because I'm super objective and, you know, if Saka, for example, has the higher EV in the first week, it doesn't matter how much Haaland is owned by. More times out of 10, I will win by going Saka, and therefore I should play the odds because that's the game we're playing and I should go Saka. But I think I end up sometimes edging towards the EO, not because, like you say, I'm trying to play some sort of game theory thing and protect myself, but because I think it's where that bias creeps in and why maybe the EO actually ends up going that way. I look at Haaland and look at my experience last year when I was captaining Salah a lot, and I back that. I think it was the right decision. But maybe it comes back to that, you know, that risk aversion and the feelings you get when you get it wrong. Safety in numbers may be the best way of describing that, right? I will be attracted to Haaland so that I just remain with that pack early on. And I think one of the ways I really try to play FPL nowadays, and I've experimented quite a few things, is the idea of definitely going against the received wisdom, whether that be Twitter or even FPL review, but very rarely, only when I have really strong conviction. So I think there was probably two examples last year where at Christmas I went Foden, not Saka, and that was a disaster. And at the end of the season, I went Wilson, not Isak, and that was brilliant. But I basically only did it twice all season. Every week there's an opportunity to try and, you know, prove that you're clever or something like that. That's probably a harsh way of saying it, right? But there's an attraction to picking someone and shouting about it and being right. There's an opportunity to do that every week. I think I try and limit myself to do it only when the possible gain is at its absolute maximum. And so to bring this back to, you know, the Haaland, the Saka, the EO conversation, even though I guess review is telling me to go Saka here, it doesn't matter what's telling me to. I feel like this isn't an opportunity to go against what I think might hurt my rank more or gain my rank the most.
Yeah, I just think Haaland will get more points, so that's why I'm
That's,
captaining
I went on this big old monologue and you were like, dude,
No,
just princess.
I did that on purpose. No, to be fair, Saka at home to Forest could be absolutely brilliant, couldn't he? And I think
Yes.
there is definitely a world where Saka outscores Haaland. I mean, Haaland, you can even level that Haaland's not looked that great recently if you want to go down that route, and Man City in general, and even in away games theory that they're not that great away from home and yada yada. I would argue. Maybe, I mean, maybe this is a step too far, that Burnley might even be a better team than Forest, at least when they're at their own ground compared to Forest being away. I think that's probably
Yeah.
a little bit early to say, but maybe you could say that. So yeah, I get the arguments, but I'm probably going with Haaland. Maybe there's a little bit of bias in me there. Should we do some questions? Should we do some questions that we've got?
Yeah.
Yeah, did you? In fact, I'll bring them up. I'll start off. So I've got it on my phone here. So apologies, I'm looking down. I shall move back actually to our main screen, so you haven't got my team sat there clouding your judgment. Okay, this is from our friend Andy, FPL Mode. You obviously know him very well. Do we go with Stones for the upside or Ruben for the minutes? I thought I'd read that out because
Oh.
I think those minutes are gone, my friend, apparently.
Yeah. So stones for upside and minutes. Easy.
Yeah, unless he also hasn't travelled and I've missed that. To be honest, the headache already has started with Man City, where I think I wouldn't even go with either at the moment. That's the way I'm feeling right now. FPL Dwight says, hope you're both doing well. Question: bench boost in game week one, and he's listed a draft here, which I'm not going to read out. But essentially, what are your thoughts on bench boost game week one? Because I've seen quite a lot of people mention it, and even the fixture gurus, which I guess turns your head right. Your likes of Ben Crellin, who's obviously here with us,
Yeah.
and Planet FPL James, that are saying they're eyeing it up. And I think when they start mentioning it, that's to me, it's like, okay, well, these guys know better than anyone.
Yeah.
So yeah, what do you think? I mean, I'm not doing it. I'm just going to put it out there right now. But what do you
I
think?
think it's one of those, it's almost one of those logic versus emotion again. My emotion is like, no, don't do that. It's for blanks and doubles, and it's a chip. I should get joy and maximize my potential out of it. The reason someone like Ben, who we really should listen to on this stuff, he's brilliant, I think is considering it. He wrote a thread on this, by the way, on Twitter, so please do go look up at Ben Crellin. I think it was yesterday that he wrote this. I think his thinking was that if he were going to do it, the reason is that every season we have this bench boost chip, which in isolation might be worth 12, 15, 20 points, whatever it is. But in order to access those points, you have to sacrifice something around the bench boost week, whether that be your wild card in order to set up for a bench boost, or whether it just be free transfers or a free hit, for example, to save a team that couldn't bench boost in a previous week. And so the net point gain is not only hard to determine, but might actually end up being more costly than what the bench boost gained you. And so the theory for getting rid of it in game week one is you can set up for the bench boost, you could even wildcard out of it in game week two. And if we're looking at a wildcard in eight, it's not that different, especially if you can then plan with transfers. And you just get it out of the way, and you then don't need to worry about costing yourself points later, and I guess the stress that comes with that, to set up the ideal bench boost. However, in previous seasons where we've had COVID and monarchy deaths and whatnot, where we've had all these blanks and all these doubles, the bench boost hasn't really been valuable in that first week. The bench boost and the free hit and the wild card, because they've been really, really useful to navigate these weeks, and we've been given massive doubles that are worth so many points that they are worth setting up for. Ben's logic was that this season, if nothing unexpected happens, we could have, I think it was a large double in 36 or 37, a smaller one in the early 30s, and then that's basically it, which means you can wildcard for one of those, you've got your free hit for the blank, and the bench boost suddenly either isn't worth as much, or when you do set up for, say, that bench boost in 37 or whenever it would be, you really do end up costing yourself points in the weeks around it. So should we go back to that thing I was saying where just get it done in the first week, get my extra EV from the bench boost, and then just carry on the rest of the season with a, I don't know if it's a more adaptable plan, but a plan that relies less on getting my bench boost right.
Also, potentially in game week 37, I think he mentions it there, that we've seen historically towards the back end of the season, it becomes harder and harder to pick teams for some people, because it depends on what competitions they're left in and who's actually going to start. It becomes quite difficult. I think game week one, you could level that as well, that it's, we don't know for sure who's going to start, but I think that's probably an added factor. My counter to that really is the fact that I don't think it takes too much setting up or even wildcarding out for anything this season, just a product of the fact there's only pretty much two premiums, especially if Kane goes and everyone else is so cheap, that I think more than ever we're probably going to see teams that are just, I mean, it happened last season, just strong across the board. Like, I know my bench at the beginning is terrible with Surridge and Kabore, whoever it is, but I've also got Chilwell at 5.5, and I don't think it will take me long where I've got players that are actually play and decent all around the team in that position. So I suppose that's an argument where, as a result, bench boost could probably be used in a single game week, and there might be a better single game week to come in as well. Or just, like I say, it'll be easier to set up or carry players through because you'll have like 5.5 million players that are fine or whatever. Do you not feel like that?
I think what Andy Martin, in response to Ben actually, I think was saying that, because Ben's approach, I guess, was very, of course it was, it's Ben, was very predicated on the idea that he was planning. So it was either game week one because he didn't want to plan later, or he had a plan for it now, or if he was going to use it later, he had to build a plan. Whereas Andy Martin was going, his preference was he'll just use it in a week when he looks at his teams and goes, oh, my bench is really strong, and I have, you know, mentioned earlier, a benching dilemma, and he just thought it's a chip that gets me out of that and maybe buys me a few points that I were never going to get access to, which I think also is a valid strategy. But then you're maybe leaving yourself in the hands of something you can't control, because you need your bench to get good fixtures, you need them to be fit, you maybe need value options to appear so that your bench becomes more valuable throughout the season. And so I find, at least for the way I play, I find that one less attractive to myself.
Yeah. For me, I think I'm going to narrow it down to the fact that I don't have the headspace to try and work it out now. I'm still struggling with my actual team, so it's too late in the day for me to start considering it, basically. Nuclear Atoms has put a few questions in here, which I'm going to read from the chat. He's put here that, where is it, the one I've just left? Oh, yeah. Is planned transfers always a bad idea, even if it benefits my team by covering the fixtures? I'll come out and say first if that's all right. I don't think planned transfers are bad by any means. I think planning in transfers using the solver are smart ideas to know where you probably unlikely want to go. I just think that you have to be adaptable to the fact that it may not go that way. And if you're sort of planning transfers where you've got someone literally for game week one and you have to make that transfer game week two already, I'd say that's too much. But I think having a vague idea of where you want to go and the path you want to go is fine. So I don't know if that answers the question, but to a point, I guess it's good to have those planned transfers. But I wouldn't necessarily say, like, you just can't rely on it ultimately that you are definitely going to be able to do those transfers in those weeks, because things happen. Shit happens, as they say. Game week three, as I've already mentioned, maybe Havertz to someone is kind of booked in. Maybe I've got the Gabriel's Trippier thing or a Newcastle defender. Outside of that, I don't want to plan too many. That's 2 out of 8 weeks potentially. And it doesn't have to be in that week, does it? It could always be a week later or maybe a week earlier. And I think that's kind of where I'm at the limit at. 2 or 3 out of the first 8 weeks is probably what I'd have in my mind, is like, hopefully I'll be able to get to do them. Do you have a different answer?
Yeah, I mean, you used the key word that I was thinking there, which is rely. I think planning transfers is good. Relying on that plan coming off is bad, because you're really narrowing yourself into a single path to success when you do want to be flexible, or at least able to respond to changing events as much as possible. Mm. I think when it comes to the ultimate transfers, which is a wildcard, having an idea of when you're going to wildcard, whether that be game week 8 or just a general idea that it won't be game week 8 and it will be later, is probably really helpful early on, because then you can look at what sort of horizon should I be looking at a team for. Like, if you wanted to wildcard in game week 3, which I think is viable, if not a bit early, then you know you're only picking a team for 2 or 3 weeks, and that's really useful information to build a team with. If not, especially in those first couple of weeks, as you said, planned transfers actually aren't just a good idea, but they can be the reason you pick a game week one team. We've seen, looking at the review solve, that, you know, Gabriel becomes, I think it was Trippier, and there was a couple of other moves where it didn't plan too many, but there were a couple that really gave it access to the highest levels of EV.
Yeah, no, I agree. Jet Walker in the chat, do you think having 5 United and Arsenal players, so between the both, is not the best due to them playing early on? I just feel bad having that many when they match up early on. Yeah, I think that's a valid point. I mean, they, in that game week, we probably wouldn't want to have, you know, 5 players from United versus Arsenal if we can help it. But I think you just got to look at it as that's one game in isolation. Hopefully you can use maybe 1 transfer or 2 transfers in that week to bring that number down to 3 or 4. And yeah, I mean, just because it's a tough game and it's not the ideal game, I don't think you can have the ideal team every single week. So it's like a knock that I'm prepared to take because it's so good either side of that. Would you agree with it?
Yeah, I think I'd even go a bit further and say this maybe comes to one of the biases we sometimes fall prey to, which is I can't have my striker playing my goalkeeper or something, which
sort of
makes sense. Yeah, but actually, if in isolation you think one of them has the highest chance of a clean sheet and one of them's Haaland, so he has a good chance of scoring, pick them both. Because while they are competing in real life, in the game, if they have the highest chance of returning points, then pick them both. And I think that is probably a similar thing to this question here, which is instinctively, yeah, that feels bad. But if Arsenal are still a good goal-scoring side, and even if Man United concede 5, if Rashford is still a good goal-scoring threat himself, you can leave that game with points.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels so wrong, but it could be so right, basically. It could be so right. Let me grab another
FPL
one.
FPL summed up there.
FPL summed up, exactly. Someone's saying here, FPL Onside is saying, is the 6.5 million spot worth all the hype? I would rather have Madison. So he's basically taken Mbeumo out for Madison and then has Pedro up top as a result to fund that. I mean, I suppose you could just even use the Havertz slot to pick Madison, but... Yeah, well, what do you think then? The 6.5 million slot. I mean, for me, Mbomo's a really good option, but there's obviously some other options there as well. Is that like a spot you have to have in your team, or is it open to change?
Oh, you certainly don't have to have it. And a million isn't too far to stretch for another player. I think Madison might be a player that we're all a bit cool on, myself included. If Kane leaves, it makes it harder because obviously his main converter of his chances, and the way that if he's going to play at 10 in tandem, which I think we were seeing in preseason with Kane in the 9, if we're less sure over how Madison will function in that structure with Richarlison or Son or a new signing up front, that obviously hurts how confident we can be over his points potential. But he was a very, very good player for Leicester. In preseason, it looks like, okay, he's not going to be identical, but it doesn't look like he's massively fallen off or anything like that. You know, he looks capable of playing a similar role in arguably a better team. So if there's anyone we were slightly too cool on, it might be him. But I think we have time. I have time to get him later. I'm not desperate to do that now. And so someone like Mbeumo, some people might prefer Mitoma, fixtures and, you know, has good stats in the past. For me, Mbeumo, penalties, probably relatively secure minutes, decent fixtures. That just feels like too easy of a fit to take my risk on Madison just yet.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. Hopefully it's looking good and I'll be able to go there game week 3 and I'll be able to take that punt, but I'm not going to start with him. I think the Mbeumo is just a really safe and solid pick, he says. He'll be the next victim. He's already orange flagged. He'll get a notification in a minute saying he's not turned up to training. And it all starts to fall down. We'll go for one more question, if you're all right, Seb, because we've been going around an hour yet. So I've picked one more that I thought was quite interesting. I don't really know what angle he's coming from here, so I guess you can look at this in a couple of different ways. But FPL underscore fail, brackets John, says, would you rather have player A, who scored 10 goals from 15 XG last season, so underperformed, or player B, who scored 15 goals from 10 XG last season?
Shall I go first?
Yeah, you go first. You tell me, because I think it depends what context, doesn't it? But yeah, go on, you go first.
So I will assume the context is, who am I picking in the future?
Okay.
So if I'm having to use this information to pick a player for the future, I go for the underperformer, as you put it, so 10 goals from 15 XG, because the question basically becomes, what do I think is more predictive of future returns, goals or XG? And I think XG is more predictive, so I pick the player who had the higher XG, because I think I will get more goals in the future.
Okay, so let's say we're going through that context. Let's say he's suggesting, therefore, that that player is just not good. He's not a good finisher. He can't finish. And the other player's really good at finishing. So the player ability is coming to this. Does that change you at all? Let's say you put names to those, is what I'm saying. Those names. Does that affect your decision?
I mean, Darwin's obviously the fun one at the moment, but I don't know if we have enough data for him yet. And also, his XG is so good, he doesn't need to be a good finisher. He will still get goals. Maybe a better one is Jesus. I think, if I remember correctly, in the past, he has been about a one-to-one finisher, but we also are getting a suggestion that generally he could be an underperformer. In that scenario, yes, you start building it in. So I actually think Review does have finishing quality in its prediction. So someone like Son, if Son gets 10 XG, I don't think Review goes that he's going to score 10 goals. I think Review might go, there's 10.5 or 11 goals there, because we know historically he is a plus XG finisher. Whereas there are other players who we might be able to say they are negative XG finishers. But the key there is we need quite a lot of data to be confident in that. Mm. And a really good example is Sterling. I think everyone, myself included, would assume Sterling is a poor finisher. If you think XG versus G conversion is a good metric to judge a finisher by, Sterling is fine. Over his career, he's about one goal to one XG, which maybe flies in the face of what we think when we see him. And of course, there's context there, right? Because we could be watching Sterling miss tap-ins for like 0.5 XG every week and then score one banger from 50 yards, which is worth 0.05. Yeah. And so that, if that ends up being meaning his goals equal his XG, yeah, there's a bit of context there that says, okay, maybe he is a poor finisher. He just has a great long shot, so the stats are going to even out. But then if you play FPL in a sort of quite a probabilistic way of, well, if he gets 10 XG, he's going to score 10. Doesn't really matter how he scores those 10 in the long run. The real risk with FPL is we have to play it in the short term. So all those stats, all those predictions, all the way we understand, even just the eye test, right? It's better the more football you watch. But in FPL, we have to make a decision for this week and for next week and probably only the next couple of weeks, and then we have to change. That's why it's so luck-based, and that's why even taking a long-term view where you're trying to remove as much noise as possible, your results are going to be noisy. The thing is, and I really firmly believe this, is you can't predict noise. You can predict there will be noise, but you cannot predict noise. Mm. And so to go back to your question, I will go with the thing that I think delivers more signal, which is XG, especially in that example where there's a big discrepancy, because you're suggesting that player is what a sort of 67% finisher. That's a pretty low conversion rate. There aren't many players who are that bad, so I would assume they're going to adjust upwards a little bit at least.
Yeah, I'd also have to, like you said, extend that sample to way more than 10 goals and 15 XG for it to have meaning for me. Yeah, I think you could look at it the other way, and I thought, well, maybe, is he saying, what would I prefer to have in my team? Well, I'll tell you right now, I'd rather have the 15 goals, and I don't care if he's got 0.5 XG, if he's getting me more points. In the past, if we're looking back, you know, I'll take, you know, Romeo in midfield if he's bangs 17 goals for me, like, absolutely. So I'm not really bothered there, but I completely agree if it's in terms of looking forward. Just maybe have to add a little bit of context sometimes, depending on which players we're looking at, I suppose. I think on Jesus as well, if I remember right, the last time I looked, he was about 20 XG down in total across his career, which probably sounds a lot, but then at the same time, when you play that many minutes and have that many chances, it can easily tally up if you just missing the odd one here or there, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, it seems pretty bad, though.
You make a good point. I think, you know, if we're coming to a close, I guess something I'd love to leave just for myself, my own thoughts on here. I think, as you say there, points are king, right? We are playing this game to get points. The real question comes, how do we know where those points are going to come from? It is a game of predictions, of projections. And so this question is asking, I think, you know, is goals or XG a better predictor of future G, which is the bit we get points from? We don't get points for XG. My answer is, and other people's answer will differ, and that's entirely fair enough. If I believe that XG or something like Review or a statistical approach or an analytical approach or even just watching Match of the Day, whatever I believe is the better predictor, that's what I should go with. And so for me, I believe something like XG, something like Review is a better predictor of points, even if every time I actually put it into practice, I get it wrong because I just kept, you know, I keep going for heads and I keep flipping tails. That doesn't mean I should flip the tails every time. It is still a 50-50. And so I will always back the odds over the outcome, even if it makes me look very stupid.
I don't think it's stupid at all. I think we're all trying to do that. Well, most of us anyway. I'm certainly trying to go down that route as well. Thank you very much, Seb, for coming. I was about to say come on and then, like, as if you're going to disappear again. You're going to be here throughout the season. It's going to rotate, as I mentioned, right at the start. So there's going to be me, Sam, Seb and Ben throughout the season, rotating and hopefully giving you some decent content. So if you wouldn't mind liking, subscribing, commenting if you did enjoy it, that would be mostly appreciated. Well, completely appreciated. Sorry, I'm trying to read the lineup down there. Will the leaked lineups change your plans in any way? Not for me, probably not. Seb, final mention?
Yes. Yeah.
They will. Okay.
Yes, they will. I'll be honest. Yes, they will.
Cool. Okay. Well, we'll see about that. We'll see how it changes on the final day. Good luck, everyone, for the season. Remember, it's only one game week. There's a lot more pain to come.